Great Expectations, Episode 6.
And so, in a sort of dream or sleep waking, I found myself sitting by the fire again, waiting for him to come to breakfast. By and by, his door opened and he came out. I could not bring myself to bear the sight of him. And I thought he had a worse look by daylight.
I do not even know by what name to call you. You assumed some name, I suppose, on board ship?
Yes, dear boy. I took the name of Provis.
What is your real name?
Magwitch, christened Abel.
Are you known in London?
Not over and above, dear boy. I was in the provinces, mostly.
Were you tried in London?
First knowed Mr. Jaggers that way. Jaggers was for me, and what I done is worked out and paid for. And this is the gentleman what I made.
He took out of his pocket a great thick pocketbook bursting with papers and tossed it on the table.
There's something worth spending in that there book, dear boy. It's yourn. All I've got ain't mine, it's yourn. And blast you all, blast you everyone, from the Dungeness Wig to the colonist to stirring up the dust. I'll show a better gentleman than the whole lot of you put together.
Stop! I want to speak with you. I want to know what is to be done. How are you going to be guarded against the danger that you have incurred?
Well, dear boy, the danger ain't so great. Without I was informed again, the danger ain't so much to signify.
And how long do you remain?
Oh, how long? I'm not going back. I've come for good.
There being, to my knowledge, a lodging house in Essex Street, the back of which looked into the temple, I first of all repaired to that house and was fortunate to secure the second floor for my uncle, Mr. Provis. This business transacted, I turned my face to Little Britain.
Now, Pip, be careful.
I will, sir.
Don't commit yourself, don't commit anyone, you understand, anyone. Don't tell me anything. I don't want to know anything. I am not curious.
I merely want, Mr. Jaggers, to assure myself that what I have been told is true.
But did you say told or informed? Told would seem to imply verbal communication. You can't have verbal communication with a man in New South Wales, you know.
I will say informed.
Good.
Mr. Jaggers, I have been informed by a person named Abel Magwitch that he is the benefactor so long unknown to me.
That is the man in New South Wales.
And only he.
And only he.
I'm not so unreasonable, sir, as to think you at all responsible for my mistakes and wrong conclusions, but I always supposed it was Miss Havisham.
As you say, Pip. I'm not at all responsible for that.
And yet it looked so like it, sir.
Not a particle of evidence, Pip. Take nothing on looks. Take everything on evidence. There's no better rule.
I went straight back to the temple. Expecting Herbert all the time, I dared not go out. At length, one evening, I was roused by the welcome footstep on the staircase. In an instant, I saw Provis jackknife shining in his hand.
Quiet! It's Herbert.
Handel, my dear fellow, how are you? And again, how are you? And again, how are... Oh, hello? I beg your pardon.
Herbert, my dear friend, this is a visitor of mine.
Provis came forward with a little black book and then addressed himself to Herbert.
Take it in your right hand. Say, Lord, strike you dead on the spot if you split in any way, some ever.
Do as he wishes.
Lord, strike me dead on the spot if I ever split in any way, some ever.
Kiss it!
Herbert complied.
Now you're on oath.
I recounted the whole of the secret, and it was midnight before I took Provis round to Essex Street and saw him safely in at his own dark door. I turned straight back to the temple, where Herbert received me with open arms.
What is to be done?
My poor dear Handel, I am too stunned to think.
So was I, Herbert, when the blow first fell. Still, something must be done.
Handel, you feel convinced that you can take no further benefits from him, do you?
Fully. Surely you would too if you were in my place.
And you feel convinced that you must break with him.
Herbert, can you ask me?
Then the main thing to be done is to get him out of England. You will have to go with him, and then he may be induced to go. That done, extricate yourself in heaven's name, and we'll see it out together, dear old boy.
Now, Herbert, with reference to gaining some knowledge of his history. There is but one way that I know of. I must ask him point blank.
Yes. Ask him when we sit at breakfast in the morning.
He came round at the appointed time.
After you were gone last night, I told my friend of the struggle that the soldiers found you engaged in on the marshes. You remember?
Remember? Oh, I think so.
We want to know something about that man. And about you. Is not this a good a time as another for our knowing more?
Well, you're on oath, you know, Pips, comrade.
Assuredly.
And looky here, whatever I've done, it's worked out and paid for.
So be it.
Dear boy, and Pips, comrade, I'll put it all at once into a mouthful of English. In jail and out of jail, in jail and out of jail, in jail and out of jail. That's my life, pretty much. Down to such time as I got shipped off, Arter Pip stood my friend. At Epsom Races, a matter of over 20 years ago, I got acquainted with a man whose right name was Compeyson. And that's the man, dear boy, what you saw me a-pounding in the ditch. To judge from appearances, you're out of luck, says Compeyson to me. Well, yes, master, I've never been in much, I says. Luck changes, says Compeyson. Perhaps yours is gonna change. He laughed, and he gave me 5 shillings, and he appointed me for next night. Now, I went to Compeyson next night, and Compeyson took me on to be his man and partner. There was another inn with Compeyson, as was called Arthur. Him and Compeyson had been in bad things with a rich lady some years before, and they made a pot of money by it. But him and me was soon busy. My missus as I had at the time, well, stop though. I ain't brought her in. There ain't no need to go into that. At last, me and Compeyson was both convicted for felony. When we was put in the dock, I noticed first of all what a gentleman Compeyson looked and what a common sort of wretch I looked. When the prosecution opened and the evidence was put short, I noticed how heavy it all bore on me and how light on him. And when it came to character, weren't it Compeyson as had been to the school, and weren't it his schoolfellows as was in this position and in that, and weren't it me as had been tried before and as had been known uphill and downdale in bridewells and lockups? And when the verdict came, weren't it Compeyson as was recommended to mercy on account of good character and bad company? And weren't it me as never got a word but guilty? And when we were sentenced, ain't it him that gets 7 year and me 14, and ain't it him as the judge feels sorry for, and ain't it me as the judge perceives to be nothing more than an old offender of fine passion?
Is he dead?
Is who dead, dear boy?
Compeyson.
Oh, he hopes I am. If he's alive, you may be sure.
Herbert had been writing in the cover of a book. He softly pushed it over to me, and I read in it.
Young Havisham's name was Arthur. Compeyson is the man who professed to be Miss Havisham's lover.
I said to Herbert that before I could go abroad, I must see both Estella and Miss Havisham. I set off by the early morning coach before it was yet light. When I went into the coffee room at the Blue Boar Inn, whom should I see but Bentley Drummle?
You have just come down?
Yes.
Beastly place, your part of the country, I think.
Yes, I am told it's very like your Shropshire.
Not in the least like it.
Do you stay here long?
Can't say. Do you?
Can't say.
Large traces of marshes about here, I believe.
Yes, what of that?
Out of the way villages there, they tell me. Curious little public houses and smithies and that. Waiter!
Yes, sir?
Is that horse of mine ready?
Brought right into the door, sir.
I say, look here, you, sir. The lady won't ride today. The weather won't do.
Very good, sir.
Drummle glanced at me with an insolent triumph on his great jowled face that cut me to the heart.
Mr. Drummle, I did not seek this conversation, and I don't think it's an agreeable one.
I am sure it's not.
And therefore, with your leave, I will suggest that we hold no kind of communication in the future.
Quite my opinion, and what I should have suggested myself, or done, more likely, without suggesting. But don't lose your temper. Haven't you lost enough without that?
What do you mean, sir?
Waiter! Look here, you sir. You quite understand that the young lady won't ride today, and that I dine at the young lady's.
Quite so, sir.
I washed the weather and the journey from my face and hands and went out to the memorable old house. In the room where the dressing table stood, I found Miss Havisham and Estella. Miss Havisham seated on a settee near the fire and Estella on a cushion at her feet.
And what wind blows you here, Pip?
Miss Havisham, I went to Richmond yesterday to speak to Estella, and finding that some wind had blown her here, I followed. What I have to say to Estella, Miss Havisham, I will say before you presently, in a few moments. It will not surprise you. It will not displease you. I am as unhappy as you can ever have meant me to be.
Well?
When you first caused me to be brought here, Miss Havisham, I suppose I really did come here as any other chance boy might have come. As a kind of servant, to gratify a want or a whim and to be paid for it.
Aye, Pip, you did.
But when I fell into the mistake I have so long remained in, at least you led me on.
Yes, I let you go on.
Was that kind?
Who am I, for God's sake, that I should be kind? Well, what else?
I have been thrown among one family of your relations, Miss Havisham, and I should be false and base if I did not tell you that you deeply wrong both Mr. Matthew Pocket and his son Herbert, if you suppose them to be otherwise than generous, open, and incapable of anything designing or mean.
They are your friends.
They made themselves my friends when they supposed me to have superseded them.
What do you want for them?
Miss Havisham, if you would spare the money to do my friend Herbert a lasting service in life, I could show you how.
What else?
Estella, you know I love you. You know that I have loved you long and dearly. I should have said this sooner, but for my long mistake, it induced me to hope that Miss Havisham had meant us for one another. While I thought you could not help yourself, as it were, I refrained from saying it. But I must say it now.
Preserving her unmoved countenance, Estella shook her head.
I know. I know. I have no hope that I shall ever call you mine, Estella. Still, I love you. I have loved you ever since I first saw you in this house. It would have been cruel, in Miss Havisham, horribly cruel, to practice on the susceptibility of a poor boy and torture me through all these years with a vain hope and idle pursuit if she had reflected on the gravity of what she did. But I think she did not. I think that in the endurance of her own trial, she forgot mine, Estella.
It seems there are sentiments, fancies, I don't know how to call them, which I'm not able to comprehend. When you say you love me, I know what you mean as a form of words, but nothing more. You address nothing in my breast. You touch nothing there. I have tried to warn you of this now, have I not?
Surely it is not in nature.
It is in my nature.
Is it not true that Bentley Drummle is in town here pursuing you?
It is quite true.
You cannot love him, Estella!
What have I told you? Do you still think, in spite of it, that I do not mean what I say?
I would never marry him, Estella.
Why not tell you the truth? I'm going to be married to him.
Estella, dearest Estella, put me aside forever. You have done so, I well know. But bestow yourself on some worthier person than Drummle!
Oh, don't be afraid of my being a blessing to him. I shall not be that. Come. Here is my hand. Do we part on this, you visionary boy or man?
Oh, Stella, how can I see you, Drummle's
nonsense,
wife?
Nonsense, nonsense. You will get me out of your thoughts in a week.
Out of my thoughts, Estella? You are part of my existence. Part of myself. You have been in every line that I have ever read since I first came here. The young, common boy whose poor heart you wounded even then. Estella, to the last hour of my life, you cannot choose but remain part of my character, part of the little good in me, part of the evil. God bless you. God forgive you.
And so I left her. I struck off to walk all the way to London. I could not go back to the inn and see Drummle there. I could not bear to sit upon the coach and be spoken to. I could do nothing half so good for myself as tire myself out. It was past midnight when I crossed London Bridge. My readiest access to the temple was through Whitefriars Gate. The night porter examined me with much attention as he held the gate open for me to pass in.
A note for you, sir. The messenger that brought it said, would you be so good as to read it by the light of my lantern?
I opened it and read, in Wemmick's writing,
don't go home.
You've been listening to Great Expectations by Charles Dickens, adapted by Marcus Baisley, produced as a collaboration between Blackshaw Theatre and Cyphers. The narrator was played by Jeremy Drakes, Magwitch and Pumblechook by Dylan Lincoln, Compeyson, Porter and Galley by Marcus J. Baisley, Estella and Mrs. Joe by Victoria Hamblin, Pip by Rupert Sadler, Joe, Wemmick and Drummle by Christopher Anderton, Sergeant and Jaggers by Alexander Pankhurst, Miss Havisham by Jessica Bryan, Herbert Pocket by William Holyhead, and Biddy by Rosie Marsh. Sound recording and design by Andrew Crane. Produced by Helen Johnson and Aisha Chapman.